Welcome to the show. I'm Jason Whitlock, and I'll tell you why I'm concerned about Nick Foles and why we just got more proof the Ravens made a huge mistake taking Lamar Jackson in the first round. Speaking for Yourself starts now. Ow! Friday. Clay Travis is in the house. Heads are exploding all over the internet. Hello and welcome. Colin Cowherd is off. So I'm joined today by the most polarizing man in the sports media. Outkick the coverage is Clay Travis, Fox Sports college football reporter Bruce Feldman, and the founder of The Big Lead, Jason McIntyre. All right, let's start in college football, where people have been sounding off about Ohio State's decision to suspend Urban Meyer and athletic director Gene Smith for mishandling allegations of domestic violence against an assistant coach. Everyone from USA Today to The Athletic are saying the incident will hurt Meyer's legacy. But Gene Smith's lawyer, Rex Elliott, pushed back against that narrative on Facebook, writing, quote, "Two great men fell on their sword for a university they dearly love, and both men faced a room full of reporters and admitted they failed in their duties to better manage and react to a troubled employee, even though they had no idea about the information that has since come out about some of the things he may have been doing. Those are the facts." Elliott later tweeted, "These were his feelings, not his clients. All right, I'm going to avoid Elliott's comments a little bit and just say all the people suggesting that Urban Meyer is a monster, he has no integrity, his legacy's been ruined, I think they all need to pump the brakes. Because I keep hearing all this conversation about how unfair Urban Meyer was to Courtney Smith. And where's the proof of that? Urban Meyer was unfair to Ohio State University if he did anything wrong here. Courtney Smith and Zach Smith have two kids and they were married. If Urban Meyer fires him, how does that help Courtney Smith and those two kids? If anything, Urban Meyer was too loyal to Zach Smith and looking out for his overall family. Firing Zach Smith doesn't help Courtney Smith. It puts Ohio State in jeopardy and puts him in this embarrassing situation. But I've seen no proof that Urban Meyer did anything inappropriate to Courtney Smith. And so I just think we're going a little bit overboard that his legacy is forever tarnished and he's some monster and wasn't supportive of Courtney Smith. I just don't see the proof there.
I think his legacy is tarnished. I disagree with you, but I think you can take it out of the Courtney Smith, Zach Smith realm and just go in an interesting direction. Let's talk about Urban Meyer and Gene Smith, the athletic director at Ohio State. To me, the linchpin of this story that I think is the most interesting, Urban Meyer decides to hire Zach Smith, even though he knows he's been arrested for domestic violence. In 2000,
I don't know if arrested. I think there was an investigation. People are saying there's no arrest.
In 2009, he was arrested in Gainesville. Now, there eventually the charges were dropped and everything else, but he was arrested. Now, what's fascinating about this is in 2015, when they try to figure out what happened, Urban Meyer, Gene Smith sit down and talk, just like you and I and the crew here are talking, and they're debating what they should do. Let's follow the police investigation. Let's pay attention to this. Urban Meyer never, and I think this is significant, never tells Gene Smith, oh, by the way, you should know back in 2009 he had this incident. He didn't tell him when he hired him at Ohio State. I think the person here who has been victimized in the sense of the Urban Meyer-Gene Smith relationship is Gene Smith, because in 2015 he was trying to make a determination about what to do with Zach Smith without full information that Urban Meyer didn't share to him. And even without that information, in 2016, according to the report, Gene Smith said, Urban, I don't think Zach Smith should still be employed here. Why don't you fire him? And Urban said no, still didn't share that info. Bruce, like, when you think about the way that decision was made, doesn't that seem like a detail that should have been shared with Gene Smith?
Yeah, look, I think Urban Meyer has admitted this. He should have fired Zach Smith a long, long time ago. He was way too loyal to somebody that he gave more chances to than most people would give if it was a player had some of this bad behavior. When I look at this, just getting back to the original question, this is going to be part of his legacy. I mean, Jason, in the way you framed it was, is it tarnished his legacy? We're going to see. But this is always going to be part of Urban Meyer. I think the things that you take away, and that press conference we saw the other night, he gets asked specifically about Courtney Smith. And he thinks about it, the question registers, and then he says, you know, it kind of brings it back to everybody else. He doesn't mention her by name. if you're somebody who is a leader in the college football community, that's an opportunity. Even if you do not want to mention her by name, you can talk about the magnitude of domestic violence. Even if you do not believe, because the police did not find charges, even if you do not believe some of the things that have been alleged, take it off that way and talk about domestic violence and because of how complex the situation is, what it does to families. Because as you said, there are two young kids there. And if I was him, I'm thinking, you know what, whether I believe it or not, there are two young kids now where a lot of stuff that was very private and ugly is now extremely public and messy. And those kids are going to be as the victims of this more than anything. And I think that would have been the opportunity at least to show more compassion on that front. And that's where I think that was the takeaway from it. All the 23 stuff in the 23-page document is pretty damning in
there,
too.
We got time, and I'm going to come to you, but I just want to respond again. We're talking about Urban Meyer, who, again, may have harmed Gene Smith and may have harmed Ohio State. But when we sit there and say, oh, he didn't defend Courtney Smith, or he didn't say, her own mother is not defending her and is, in fact, questioning the story and the credibility.
But I'm not talking about necessarily whether he believes her or not. I'm talking about when you have a zero tolerance policy towards domestic violence, when you talk about honesty. I'm just saying, use that opportunity, if you don't, to take it onto the issue of domestic violence. That was my point.
My point is, and Jason, I'm coming to you right now. My point is, there's all this outrage directed towards Urban Meyer. And most of the fuel for that outrage is, he's done Courtney Smith wrong. Her mother, her own mother, is skeptical of the story and has said so publicly. Be outraged at her, not Urban Meyer.
In college football, there's no doubt, Bruce, you're right. In the short term, Urban Meyer's legacy takes a hit. This year, that press conference is going to be played on and on, especially week three, week four. But I just look 10 years down the road, okay? Urban Meyer's 54 now. When he's 64, is anybody going to look back and say, hey, remember that three-game suspension he had?
I think so.
I just don't. 10 years from now?
I think so. Well, I think it, first of all, depends on what he does for the next 10 years.
I
mean, if he's dominant, if he wins three or four more national championships.
He could win another, yeah.
I think this is, right now, a first paragraph discussion of Urban Meyer if he had an obituary. I think 100%.
And who's writing this legacy, Clay? That's a big question, because if you come on these TV shows 10 years from now, Urban Meyer, yeah, he's got 5 national titles 10 years from now.
What does he do about it going forward now? There's have to talk about things a little more, because that 23-page report came out after the press conference. That's not going to go away. Will he do some things that will maybe deal with some of the optics that we have here? Right now, I think there's a lot of people, short of Ohio State fans, who are uncomfortable with how this story has unfolded.
I agree, because everyone has bought into a false narrative that Urban Meyer has wronged Courtney Smith. And Urban Meyer sitting there going, no, I know Zach and Courtney. Me eliminating him from work does not help them or their kids. He's actually trying to be loyal to their family that they were trying to have. If he wronged anybody, it's Ohio State and Gene Smith. So therefore, all the people grandstanding and oh my God, he's a monster. Gene Smith and Ohio State are good with whatever crime Urban Meyer did to them. Let's quit pretending like when the accuser's own mother is on the record saying she's skeptical of the story and believes her daughter has a vendetta against her ex-husband, let's quit acting like the crime has been committed by Urban Meyer against this woman. The crime was committed perhaps by Zach Smith, not Urban Meyer.
I think the decision that Urban Meyer made here was a series of bad ones, right? What you are saying, if Urban Meyer had shown up, were you at Big Ten Media Days?
I was, yeah.
All right, pretend I'm Urban Meyer. If I show up there and he's getting grilled on these questions, if Urban Meyer had come out and said, guys, when I looked into this Zach Smith-related incident, we followed in 2015 the police report. They decided they weren't going to press charges. I didn't want to set a precedent in my program for either players or for coaches that based on accusations we would fire people or suspend people. If I was wrong in the way that I responded to that, that's because I wanted the police to let me know. I wanted to set the precedent of charges being filed. I can't get into a lot of the other HR details. Since then, we've had to fire him. I'm disappointed in the way it's worked out. I feel for the kids in this relationship. And like any marriage, it's hard for somebody outside the marriage to say how it went. If he just says those exact words, He's done.
No, wait, wait, Clay.
That story
is over.
If
you're Urban, let me ask you, Urban, why'd you delete all those text messages?
Huh? They didn't.
How did you have selective memory?
Oh, yeah, but that is
when they started asking.
That's after the Big Ten media days. I'm saying in July when he showed up the first time and addressed. I think Urban Meyer lying to the media is what provided right. Jet
well, everybody, I think everybody agrees. Go. Gene Smith even told, you look at the text message. That's what Gene Smith told him to do. Be short.
Yeah.
We got to go, but I'll just say this. There was a crime allegedly against the media, against Gene Smith, and against Ohio State. If everybody's outraged about those crimes, let Ohio State Gene Smith be outraged about it.
They're going to have you dot an I. Well, Michigan quarterback dot an I. It's unbelievable.
Well, perhaps not surprisingly, the Urban Meyer controversy has led to more hand-wringing in the media about the sport of football in general, including Sports Illustrated, where a new column claims Ohio State's allegedly soft punishment of Meyer stems from a mythology about the sport's cultural significance, writing, quote, "The game itself is propped up as bigger and more important than anything that stands in its way. Here is a truth about why football is important. Because lots of people watch NFL games on Sunday for entertainment. But here is a lie about why football is important. Because it helps create some sort of national toughness that can't be manufactured anywhere else. I'm almost at a loss for whom to blame for this misguided notion that our collective durability in war and peace finds its roots in football." Look, Tim Layden wrote this piece, and I respect Tim Layden, but he's just misguided. He's exaggerated. He's created a straw man that the argument is that football is the reason why America's tough. Football helps a lot of kids like me, and I do think it builds character. And so I read Tim's piece, and so all these things he's attributed to football, all of them are applicable to Hollywood and entertainment.
Yeah.
So Michelle Beadle or whoever else wants to swear off football, are they also going to swear off Hollywood and movies and everything else? We got the Me Too movement. Everybody, for as long as I've known, has talked about casting couches in Hollywood. You got Kevin Spacey in Hollywood. All kinds of things, predatory things, overlooked in Hollywood. Are we swearing off movies and television shows and all of that? There is a war, an unfair, ridiculous war on football, and I'm sick of it.
I think what happens, guys, is you tweeted this and I saw it, is Michelle Beadle, for instance, going to swear off gymnastics? The answer would be no, despite the fact that there was a scandal around U.S. women's gymnastics, because sports and criminality sometimes run together. It's not, the sport is not causing the criminality. And I think that you read articles like this, there's a big distinction between people who are involved in football sometimes make bad decisions. Football is not causing them, by and large, to make those bad decisions, right? It's reflective of society. I remember when I read a good piece about domestic violence in football, and everybody's been focused on the NFL, college football. Police and military have infinitely higher rates of domestic violence, right? It's because young men sometimes make violent decisions that are indefensible in those categories. It's not because they play football. I think we're confusing oftentimes the cause of these situations.
Well, towards that, just as you said, it dawned on me, the reason why it gets more attention is because nobody typically covers or knows who those people are. Right. They're rather anonymous. And whereas if there is some bad, ugly story that comes out, 10 years ago, certainly 20 years ago, it doesn't become national news because there's not social media to get it out everywhere. So I do think it creates this crazy echo chamber. It's not to say there aren't problems and there aren't things that need to be addressed and people don't need to evolve and have more awareness of it. I just think everything becomes an outrage from that.
I think you're right. There is a war on football, but you know, Whitlock, we talked about this on the show. There seems to be two realities in America now: online, social media, and then the real world. And there's a war on social media online, but then you go in the real world, and we all have kids up. We go to our kids' birthday parties. We talk to dads, and they want to know about football. Who are you taking in fantasy? Who do you like in week one? Nobody brings up anything that's in this column. I've never talked to anyone on the streets, at the gym, at a kid's birthday party, anywhere, who wants to know about some of the stuff in this story. And I'm just puzzled as to where this is coming from. Because in reality, people love football. I mean, the ratings don't lie. If you go on social media, guys, it's like the NBA is the biggest sport in this country.
Yeah.
And then in reality, you look at the TV ratings and what rules? By a mile, football.
I think there is a calculated decision to attack football to elevate other sports.
There's no question about it. And I don't want to go too big picture, but I can't help myself. There's a war on masculinity, and football is at the head of that. And it's the most masculine popular thing we have in American culture. It's the number one show on 5 different TV networks. And there are people that just don't want that to be the case. And so, again, Bruce said it, that when we talk about what goes on with policemen and people in the military, it doesn't get covered. The things that happen in Hollywood and in the movie industry, they get covered, but not without the vitriol, without the demonization of all of Hollywood. We've hearing this, the stories about what goes on in Hollywood, all the same things that go on in football. But no one says, well, it's the movies, it's Hollywood, it's the television shows that are doing this. Football unfairly attacked, and people need to stop it. Responsible people, the executives and the leaders in this country need to put their foots down. Again, we all make money with football. The reason this show, this network exists is because of football. I just can't believe these people that continue to attack football. And I'm not saying football is flawless. Nothing is. But my God, can we stop the unfair vitriolic attack and everybody involved in football? And every time someone does something wrong, when Urban Meyer's not honest with his athletic director at university, oh my God, football is the worst thing in the world. Give me a break. All right, welcome back to the show. Clay Travis is back. We're joined now by current NFL Hall of Famer Eric Dickerson and Pro Bowl receiver, former Pro Bowl receiver TJ Houshmandzadeh. All right, let's move to the NFL, where top pick Baker Mayfield had another mediocre night, struggling to move the ball and throwing a pick in a 5-0 win over the Eagles. But Baker looked like Brett Favre next to Nick Foles, who threw 2 picks, lost a fumble, and tripped over his own feet in end zone for a safety. Philly has actually yet to score with Foles leading the offense this preseason. All right, I spent the entire offseason saying Nick Foles needed to be going after starter's money and a starter's job in the NFL. He didn't do it. He wanted to be a backup. And you know what? His attitude matches his performance. He wanted to be a backup quarterback. He looks like a backup quarterback. This is a major red flag to me, in my opinion, for Nick Foles and the Philadelphia Eagles. His attitude wasn't right. It was like, mission accomplished. I won the Super Bowl. I can retire now. I don't want the responsibility of being a starter. I'm not going to go after a starter's job. He looks like a backup quarterback. To me, last night, I'm far more concerned about Nick Foles than Baker Mayfield.
I think you're totally wrong. And I think you're totally wrong because Nick Foles, best case scenario for the Philadelphia Eagles, if you're trying to project for him, he starts 1 or 2 more games for that franchise forever. And then they go to Carson Wentz, who's their franchise quarterback. Whereas Baker Mayfield is, in theory, the savior in Cleveland. And I don't know about you, but he ain't looked like much like a savior so far. He can't beat out Tyrod Taylor. The biggest story has been, how do you pronounce Tyrod Taylor's name? And I'm telling you guys right now, Baker Mayfield has looked okay, but he hasn't looked like the savior of a franchise, and he needs to be.
Well, I agree with you, Nick Foles. Nick Foles, to me, he is a backup quarterback. That's what he's like a Jeff Hostetler. You know, Jeff Hostetler, he played the 49ers, beat the 49ers, and they went to the Super Bowl.
Yeah.
Right. Mm-hmm. Then he played the Bills, beat the Bills. They actually won the Super Bowl. He's a Jeff Hollis type quarterback. You know, when they played Atlanta in the playoffs, he played well in that game. He played pretty good. The defense really won that football game.
If Julio Jones catches that ball in the end zone, nobody's talking about Nick Foles at all. Nobody's talking about the Eagles.
And you're right. But when I look at Baker Mayfield, to me, is a young quarterback. He's the guy that is going to be the face of that franchise eventually. I mean, you don't have to play right now. You know, they've done a very good job of getting other players around him. The interception that he had, the interception was not all on him. As you watch the film, you see the receiver coming around on a crossing route. That linebacker saw him, pushed him. Baker Mayfield threw the ball where he should have been, and that's why the pick happened. So, I mean, he's young still, but he has that swag. He has that it factor. And for Cleveland, the city of Cleveland, they need that.
For me, I'm more concerned with Nick Foles because you just don't know how Carson Wentz is going to come back. You don't know. And if he has to go back in, he's won a Super Bowl. I don't care if he's a backup or not. He won a Super Bowl against the New England Patriots about yesterday. So much for defense being taken out the NFL, huh? 5-0. It was 5-0. So defense is alive and well on one point. But Baker Mayfield is a rookie. Like, I don't know why everybody wants instant results with everything you – He's a rookie. He's going to have a learning curve. He's going to have a lot of bumps and bruises and highs and lows. You can't expect the world out of him so early. He has to learn the NFL game.
So don't be super swag man, right? The guy is posing that's his personality. Shirtless right. with a tiger, and he is.
So what do you want him to be?
I want him to
Whoa
come
is
in.
Me?
I want him to come in and be good enough to beat out Tyrod Taylor. Let's be honest here.
Clay, right? Wait, Tyrod Taylor, that's disrespectful.
No. No,
that's pretty.
I don't think it's disrespectful to say that the number one overall draft pick, mm-hmm. right? Can you guys name me a guy? The Tyrod Taylor, best case scenario, 15th, 16th best quarterback in the NFL. Absolutely best case scenario.
I would agree
right?
with that. Yeah.
So
yeah.
if he can't beat out the 15th or 16th Clay. Best quarterback, it's different if you're Clay. Aaron Rodgers.
How many years? Clay, hold for one. Clay, the head coach has to allow that to happen.
Well, and that's.
And Hugh Jackson has been. Totally committed to Tyrod Taylor. He hasn't even let Baker take reps with the first
team. I know.
Team.
He took him yesterday.
So he's a surprise because he had to. But again, the guy hasn't been prepared to have success. He's not being treated like the number
that's
one overall
I'm concerned.
All pick in the draft. But to me, that's about Hugh Jackson. That's not so much about Baker Mayfield.
Well, part of success is who the coach is, right? I mean, I think a big part of why we saw Nick Foles have the success he did in the Super Bowl because he got put in the best possible scenarios in that Eagle offensive attack. And so I don't think the Eagles, you know, it's a benefit to know that he can win a Super Bowl. I don't care how a guy
but
plays.
But you got to also understand in the preseason, there's no game planning that's going on. There's no game planning. We're not looking at what you're doing in third and short and third and long or whatever it may be. Everything is pretty vanilla, so you can't get too high strung on, oh, Nick Foles. They're not running many RPOs, and you can watch the game and see that they're not.
Yeah.
And so you can't get too concerned about Nick Foles in the Philly offense because there's no game plan very much in the preseason.
That's why I'm saying Baker makes me a little bit more nervous.
But what is the rush for Baker to be in there and be the starter right now?
He's the number one overall pick.
But it's no rush. I'm saying it's no – you want him to have a long career. You don't want him to have a short career. Let's say he goes in and plays just like RG3 did when he came in the league. He had a pretty – well,
amazing first year.
After that, it started going down, and then he was out of there. So you don't want the same thing for Baker Mayfield. You want to bring him along slowly so you can have a long career.
One game in the last 2 years. The kid has all the confidence in the world, and you want to. I don't care who you are. You can be up here. You start losing multiple games in a row, you'll be down here real quick, and you want to keep it up here.
All right, welcome back to the show. Clay Travis, TJ Houshmandzadeh, and Jason McIntyre are back. Let's move to Dez Bryant, who made a cameo on Hard Knocks this week after visiting with the Browns, and reportedly Cleveland is very interested and get a deal done, but when a fan mocked Dez on Instagram for not having a contract yet, Dez responded in typical Dez fashion, writing, "I got a contract offer from the Browns in my phone right now. Shut the hell up." This is, I just don't get Dez Bryant in the social media thing and why he's letting trolls and why he is trying to defend himself over social media. I say I don't get it, but I do get it. All these young athletes are addicted to social media. Dez Bryant just keeps soiling himself and giving teams a reason to pass on him. If I'm Cleveland, I would be very leery. I don't want a guy who's living on social media. I want a guy who's living in the real world, and particularly a guy like Dez with his history. I don't. When Jason Witten wrote his piece a few weeks ago about athletes controlled by Twitter, I think it was a cry for help. It was an intervention for Dez Bryant that he's ignoring.
It's not only Dez Bryant. It's lots of people. And he's particularly there in his mentions. I would say that Dez Bryant, Donald Trump, Elon Musk, take it outside of athletics, right? I wish the president spent a lot less time on Twitter. I wish Elon Musk, who may be the most brilliant capitalist in the entire world, spent a lot less time on Twitter. Both of them regularly get in trouble on Twitter, and I think Dez Bryant fits that mold too. He is creating a situation where he's not going to be employable, and for what? For nothing. It's nonsensical to me.
Yeah, this is his history, though, right? You guys remember in Dallas what happened? You know, first 2 years, he's a bit of a problem off the field. They had to get him a curfew. They told Dez Bryant, "You're not allowed to go in strip clubs. No alcohol." Listen, when your team is banning
That's
you from
American,
strip clubs,
listen,
Dez Bryant's got major problems. But now here's the thing. He's made $56 million in his career. Who sits at home after making $56 million and is on Twitter responding to trolls?
Hey, our president's
a billionaire. Money has nothing to do with it.
I think that's the issue. It's
like Dave Chappelle, you say, when keeping it real goes wrong.
Yeah.
And the problem is, he's defending himself. And is it right or wrong? Nobody wants anything negative to be said about him. I don't care who you are. It bothers more than others. And all he did was react. Right or wrong, he just reacted. And he's just not getting great advice. Like, everybody wants to wait for a contender when you're a vet. Contending teams, they don't need you. That's why they're contending teams. And they don't want, they have a good team. Unless they suffer a catastrophic injury at the receiver spot, the better teams don't want him. He had his opportunity to go to Baltimore, which I thought he should have done, and just crafted a contract first year, whatever he would have made second year, give me an $8 to $9 million bonus third day of the year. If they don't do that, they have to release him. So in essence, it would have been a one-year deal.
I want to respond to one thing you said about he's getting great advice. I think he is getting great advice. But here's what I tell some young people in my family. I've been telling this for years. Man, you are great at taking advice. You're terrible at following advice. And that's what Dez Bryant's problem is.
You're not on social media, right?
I just got on.
Oh, you did? Why now? You've been waiting this long. Why did you decide to do it now? Because all of us, obviously, in the media have to make a living on social media. Yeah. And I do wonder a lot, how much different would our industry be if social media didn't exist? Now, certainly I've benefited being able to share my opinions and everything else. But I think on some level, when you have a measure of success, when you're Donald Trump, why do you care how you got elected president? You're the president, right? Why do you care what somebody says about you on Twitter or television? Elon Musk, you have built
SpaceX. Because
we're
human.
You have built
Tesla. We're human.
But let your successes speak for themselves. Dez Bryant has been very successful.
Don't listen to what they're saying. It doesn't matter.
He's saying he has a contract from them. NFL Network says they could sign him in a couple weeks. You know what that means?
That makes the Browns look bad.
Well, wait a sec. He's a fallback option. If Josh Gordon relapses, yeah, we'll bring in Dez Bryant. If Josh Gordon messes up, Dez Bryant, you're our guy. But until then, Dez Bryant's not coming to the
Browns. Or they offered him like $1 million. Just because you have a contract offer doesn't mean that it's a good contract offer,
I mean, but
right?
When you've made $56 million, honestly, if I made $56 million, this is just me, I could care less what I'm getting that year because I know I'm going to ball out and get more. That's how I would think.
It is how you would think if you were a highly confident person. And everything Dez Bryant is doing screams to me he's a very insecure, lacks confidence person. And that's, I see a lot of people, and I had to discipline myself in terms of how was I gonna respond to people that troll me. I tend to respond with jokes and with not taking them seriously. Dez, to me, and again, I've been where Dez is, where you just wanna kill people for the dumb stuff they're saying, they're uninformed, but it does you no good, because first of all, what Dez has gotta realize, it may not even be a real person doing that.
I don't fault him for responding, but I just don't believe that's the right way to go about it when the narrative is he's a quote-unquote bad person. I just don't think it was a good look.
All right, to another guy getting burned by social media, White Sox pitcher Michael Kopech, who apologized after it was revealed he had tweeted some offensive things when he was 17 years old. Kopech is just the latest of several athletes this year whose old tweets have come back to haunt them. This list includes like Josh Allen, we saw with DiVincenzo, with Villanova. And look, there's a common thread, and I'm going to go all the way here, and it's going to irritate people, but it just keeps happening to white athletes, young white athletes, and we keep finding their old tweets. And I used to be a young black athlete. And I know all the dumb stuff I said when I was 13, 14, 15, 16, 17 years old. Thank God we didn't have Twitter and social media. But I think this has to be orchestrated because it keeps happening at Josh Allen on draft night, Josh Hader at the All-Star game. It just keeps happening at these inopportune, calculated times. This is orchestrated to keep this story in the news. And I say that because I'm like, I used to be a young black athlete. I said just as much dumb stuff as my white teammates. And coming from the black community and a black family, I know how homophobic I was as a young person.
Yeah.
You can't tell me there's no young black athlete that isn't spewing homophobic things over social media that people could drag out and say, oh, look at this person, and make them apologize. It just keeps happening to the same white athletes over and over again. This is orchestrated. It needs to stop. People, kids, say dumb things, really dumb things, of all colors and all stripes. Michael Kopech is no dumber at 17, 18 years old than I was.
Here's my solution to this. One, delete every tweet that you sent when you were a kid if you become a professional athlete. The day you get drafted at 18, 19, 20 years old or sign that scholarship, delete everything that you sent before then. Here's my second big thing. I'm curious what you guys think about this. When you get arrested for a small crime when you're a juvenile, you steal a bag of potato chips at a gas station. By the time you're 18, what do? We wipe away that arrest, and what's the rationale that we make for that decision? We say, kids make dumb decisions. We don't want that to follow them into adulthood. Well, if we're willing to wipe away actual crimes when people get to be 18, why in the media and why in the world at large do we judge a kid who sends a tweet when he's 16 or 17? We are giving more lenient treatment to actual arrest for under 18-year-olds in terms of the way the media responds to it and the way that we treat the juvenile system than we do tweets. Does it make sense to punish words over actions for juveniles?
These are some great points, Clay. I want to quickly get back to Whitlock's original take, which kind of blew my mind when I saw this. But then I thought about it. I'm like, orchestrated is a bit strong. That means that there's somebody pulling the string somewhere.
Yeah.
And I don't know that it's that strong, but there's certainly a trend here. Now, it has happened at black athletes. Tyreek Hill of the Kansas City Chiefs sent some really offensive stuff. Another player, Geronimo Allison of the Packers, they lit him up. But speaking as a guy who runs a website, I will say this. These posts do monster traffic.
People love to read about it.
And it's wrong, and here's why.
Clickbait, yes.
It's like the car accident syndrome. Like, wait, what did this guy tweet when he was 16? I've got to click on that and read the story. And there's no story, right? It's just a bunch of tweets.
Yep.
And, and then you get the situation where the mainstream media, the Washington Post, the New York Times, those guys are getting a lot of traffic off these. We're in the same business. We've got to get traffic. And now you've got everybody writing about tweets, acting like it's a big deal when it's not. It's meaningless, and I personally hate it, but you're in a business where your profit, you need to make money. That's what we're in this business for, right? TV shows, radio, websites, we all need to make money, and you're now talking about tweets from guys who are 17, which is totally
messed
up.
It happens with every race. What's going on in our society now is African-Americans aren't getting equal rights. Oh, we're vilified and police brutality. So anytime a white athlete does anything that's degrading to a black person, it's going to cause attention. It's going, as you say, get clicks. It's happened with Larry Nance when he got drafted to the Lakers. He bashed Kobe when he was in college. That came out. Larry Tunzel, when he was coming out through the draft. The marijuana thing, that came out. So it's happening to not just the white athlete, it's the black athlete as well. It's just the rhetoric is different, and it's gonna gain more attention because it's a racial thing. And it's what you said. When you're a teenager, you do and say things that when you look back on you say, what was I thinking? Why would I do that?
I think context also matters here. There's a difference between Dante DiVincenzo sharing a Meek Mill lyric, as in, like, I love this lyric, I'm aspiring to be as good as Derrick Rose at dribbling a basketball, and a guy like Riley Cooper insulting somebody with a racial slur. We use context clues in most of life. It seems like social media makes us so stupid that we don't look at the context oftentimes.
I gotta say, rarely does this happen, and I'm sorry for being this arrogant. All three of you made better points than I did. Y'all really took my understanding of this to a much higher level. I stand by some of what I said in terms of this feels orchestrated. I'm a conspiratorial type person to some degree. I just think, like, people are actively trying to embarrass sports.
Oh, that's happening. And that is just, definitely happening.
Because it's going to make news.
No, I get it's trying to make news, but it's just like we're trying to smear the reputations of athletes regardless of. And so here's what Laramie Tunstall was on a bong deal. And I mean, that was stupid on his part, but he's a damn kid. I know the experience.
Gas mask.
All the things you all referenced, it's just like athletes and just being exploited and used and embarrassed and shamed by the mainstream media. And Jason, you make the great point in terms of how the blogosphere is now leading the rest of the mainstream media, where the reverse used to be the case. The mainstream media used to lead the blogosphere.
Let's also think about how this becomes a story, which I think goes to your initial point. Someone sees that an athlete has had a big game, and their first thought is not, man, I really enjoyed that good game. Dante DiVincenzo scored a lot of points. It's to go on Twitter and say, I'm going to look up these words and see if they've ever used them in the history of their Twitter account. Like, what kind of person is responsible to
that? You want to knock them down a peg. Yeah. This attitude that, like, I'm a nobody on social media. I've got 10 followers. But guess what? I can take this guy down at the career, at his apex, you know, in the national championship game. And on some level, that's super wrong and messed up. And then here it is, we're talking about it on TV.
I would say that my new position or where I've come through from this conversation is like, athletes and all the money that they make, you know, particularly from when I was a young person. I can remember when Magic Johnson was making $1 million a year and we thought that was a big deal. Now guys make $30, $40, $50 million a year. There's just so much more jealousy towards athletes.
Just
take athletes off the pedestal. It just seems to be
the inequality in this country, which is, you know, trickling down to sports now. And you're seeing these, you know, and we talked about it earlier, NFL owners. You got 30 of the 32 owners are white guys, okay? They're almost billionaires. They're ridiculously wealthy. NFL players can't get guaranteed contracts. There's jealousy.
That's a different argument. All right, welcome back. Clay Travis, Eric Dickerson, and TJ Houshmandzadeh are back. Let's move to Baltimore, where Lamar Jackson hasn't exactly lived up to the post-draft hype so far, looking overmatched and completing just 42% of his passes in the preseason. So maybe it's not surprising that the Ravens might carry three quarterbacks on the roster for the first time in almost a decade, with John Harbaugh saying the decision to keep RG3 will go right to the wire. This, to me, is proof they made a mistake overdrafting Lamar Jackson. They're in a conundrum and got this problem because
guys are fired up already.
RG3 is their second best quarterback, but they got to keep Lamar Jackson because he was drafted at the end of the first round. And oh my God, now it's going to go down to the wire. Are we going to do the right thing and have a legitimate backup quarterback and keep three? Or are we going to let RG3 go and hope and pray Joe Flacco never gets hurt?
You guys are so fired up. I know what you guys are going to say. I'll let you guys go. Here's what I said. I loved watching Lamar Jackson play in college. I loved gambling on his games. Bobby Petrino, that offense they would set up was electric. It was exciting to watch. Here's what I noticed, and I'm far from an X's and O's guy. Bobby Petrino either schemed somebody open or Lamar Jackson ran. That was their game plan at Louisville. When he actually went up, Lamar Jackson, against really good SEC opponents, over his career, I got some stats for you, and this is what made me nervous, particularly in the bowl game he finished with against Mississippi State. Lamar Jackson against SEC defenses, 48.5% completion percentage, 9 touchdowns, 10 interceptions. This man won the Heisman Trophy against ACC defenses and below. He's an electric, exciting player. He wasn't ready to play at the quarterback position in my mind. If Joe Flacco goes down, I think you got to keep RG3 because he's the most ready to come in and run the offense. Tee off, guys.
Ozzie Newsome, I asked him this a couple of weeks ago at the Hall of Fame. I just want to see what he's going to say. I said, what do you think of Lamar? Can he play in the National Football League? He said, Eric, most definitely can play. He said, he's not ready to play right now. He said, but man, he can play. I said, what about his accuracy? He said, we can work on that. He said, I'm telling you, I'm excited. And when you have, Ozzie's done a great job with the Baltimore Ravens, so I think he would know. He said, he's a project, but I'm telling you,
If he'd have said
this guy has no chance of playing, Yes.
Do you remember your first wife?
I've never been married, so.
Damn it.
Wow, just went right to like two. He didn't just assume you were married. He assumed you were divorced.
What's up with that?
He drafted the guy. What else is he going to say?
Man, that's not always true. Some coaches, you know, he just said.
Not at the quarterback
position. This is what he just said. You know what? I think he's a big project, but I think we can work with it. He said it with excitement, Eric. He said, this guy can play the quarterback position. Look, they just happen to be fortunate enough that RG3
You have to keep three, though, right? Don't you have to keep RG3, too?
You have to keep RG3. You have to. But he's a rookie. This guy's he's going to be a project.
We got another member of the Jackson Hive. Go ahead, T-Bone.
Go ahead. Number one, the Ravens should and they will keep RG. You have to. If we're going to have a discussion about concern of Baker Mayfield and he was a number one pick, why should the number 32 pick in the draft be that great and ready to play? If we're talking about Baker Mayfield and his being concerned about him, but we're not concerned about the 32nd pick, and we knew coming into the draft that Baker Mayfield was more ready than Lamar Jackson. RG3 has earned his spot on his team. It's not nothing
to
do.
As the backup, but
it has nothing to do with Lamar Jackson. RG3 has earned. You got to remember
they have a decision to make because they don't normally carry three.
They haven't since 2009, but they have done it before.
RG3 was the number two. Y'all, we talking like he's a bum.
He was out of the league last year, TJ.
RG3 was a number two pick of the draft rookie of the year. He's proven he can play in this league. He's proven that.
If you're going to make the team better, don't you have to get Lamar Jackson to be maybe a wide receiver? He's not going to play as a third string quarterback.
He gets reps in practice. He'll get the reps in practice. He'll understand NFL game. It's what you just say when you started off. Bobby Petrino schemed.
Yep.
The NFL is not like that. Your quarterback has to throw the ball.
That's why I was nervous about him.
He will learn, and if he does not learn how to play the quarterback position, he won't be an NFL long.
Or he can be like a Cordell Stewart or a Terrell Pryor.
You don't want to be that.
A lot of people don't want to be what they want to be, but you, got to do. You got to do what you got to do.
You got to give him a chance.
You if you don't play him at
you
quarterback.
You have to give him a chance.
By the way, are we overlooking here that Whitlock
have you
thought
seen the
you
Jackson
were divorced?
What's up with that?
Have y'all seen the Jackson High?
Hey, I'm part of it.
These are the guys that will attack you if you say anything about Lamar Jackson.
There we go.
That's really funny.
All right, welcome back. Clay Travis is here for Last Call. Let's move to tonight's Big 3 Championship. Power and league MVP Corey Maggette are the favorites. Clay, any chance Three's Company with Joyce DeWitt and John Ritter, any chance they take? Do you even know what I'm referencing?
Yes, I remember the show Three's Company. I'll tell you this right now. Mm-hmm. There are few people in America who know more about Big Three basketball than me, which is why I feel very comfortable taking Three's Company as the 2-1 dog here. Barron Davis, once as an 8 seed, pulled off the huge upset. I'm on Three's Company tonight. I'm headed to Vegas. I'm going to put some money on him.
I'm rooting for Three's Company because Dante Jones is on that team, and he's a great friend of the show. But I think they're no match for Corey Maggette and Power. Nancy Lieberman, Coach of the Year. This will be a great story for the Big Three. All right, to Pittsburgh, where the Steelers have erected a 2-story tarp to prevent drones from recording their practices. Clay, forget that the Steelers don't seem to understand how high drones can fly. Do they seem totally paranoid?
I love that graphic, Game of Drones. Props to those guys. Here's the deal. Nobody runs different plays in the NFL. Are the Steelers designing something that has never occurred before? Here's what's going to happen. Big Ben's going to drop it back, and he's going to throw it to Antonio Brown. And when he doesn't drop it back and throw it to Antonio Brown, he's going to hand off to LeSean McCoy. The drone Le'Veon Bell. It's going to be wasted, right? Like, what are they going to gain?
Listen, what they don't want to say is they're paranoid about Bill Belichick. It's not the drones. They're just worried about Bill Belichick.
They should be worried about the officials. That's who they should be worried
about. All right, we'll see you next week. Thanks.